Hi everyone. I was going to say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world anyway. Thanks for being here on the on our usual Monday live stream. Now I know we're broadcasting this one across multiple channels, so over on the YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey and Getter. I think we're broadcasting most places. So as I say, you're all very welcome here in the, on the stream. We've got a really special guest and a great topic, I think. And actually, the timing of it's pretty good as well. So I hope you'll enjoy that. Now, just as always, I want to be able to make sure I can see all your comments. So just give me one second whilst I jump across onto one of the other streams where I know you also chat. So let me just... find out if I am live over there, and hopefully so, and then we can kick off. Yes, that all seems to be working fine. Okay, technology. We had a few stutters here before we got onto the stream tonight, but those are all now behind us, so we're here. So listen, right, how do I start? Well, first of all, let me start at the beginning, which is a very good place to start. And first of all, let me bring on onto the stream our very, very special guest, and that is Dr. Carol Lieberman. Hi, Carol.
Oh, hi there.
Hi, Carol. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the stream. And as I say, we did have a few technical issues before we came on live stream. So my apologies, but it's really good for you to be here, to be with us. And, you know, Carol, I guess a lot of, I mean, we're broadcasting from across the world. So viewers from as far away as New Zealand and actually the other side, closer to you, Hawaii, arguably, tune in this one. So as well as obviously my British audience. So I guess some of our American viewers probably do know you, but I just want to make sure all the Brits also get to experience your wisdom over the next time as we chat through what is, Carol, a truly remarkable and fascinating topic, you know. And I did listen to your own podcast on this, as I was saying, which I thought was really, really, it was really interesting.
Outrageous. I'll help you. Outrageous.
I thought, you know, but it's one of these stories that what I want to do is exactly what you done. I want to dissect the thing and look at, analyze things and actually try and get some real helpful information out there to people. Because superficially, the story we're going to talk about, folks, and I'm sure you all know it because you'll all have seen it in the media. It is, of course, what I call the shenanigans in the Pelosi mansion in the wee hours of the morning, Carol. Or at least that's what we've been told. We've been given certain information. And, you know, we kind of all think we know the outline. And essentially, Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul, was attacked in about 2:30 in the morning by an intruder, and he damaged him. He hit him in the head with a hammer. He had to go to hospital. And Joe Biden and others have warned us that this is, you know, part of the dangerous inflamed rhetoric, Carol, that infests or the body politic. And of course, as we speak tonight, Carol, we are talking on the eve of the midterms, and I do want to just sort of touch on that with you, maybe towards the end of the show. But look, can we start off and just for beginners, can we talk about what actually happened? Okay. Or what do you think actually happened, Carol?
Well, first of all, my sympathies go to Paul Pelosi for being married to Nancy all these years, regardless of what happened to him and whether he wanted any of it or not. You got to give him a lot of hugs for being married to her, staying married to her. Nice a guy to be staying married to her. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, everyone does say he is a nice guy. I mean, I heard Tucker Carlson talking about him and saying, you know, he is apparently a nice guy. But anyway, back to you.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. Well, first, why it's so important. And yes, it is particularly relevant today that we're talking about this because tomorrow is the elections.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I'll be happy to tell you what I think happened, but But the reason why this has blown up and why there is such secrecy and all these different stories coming out about what happened is because, you know, Biden and friends, Democrats, have wanted to use this story to say how horrible MAGA people are and how we rile up people all over and get them to do such horrible things like attack somebody, an 82-year-old man with a hammer. So that is the narrative that the Democrats wanted to get from this. Now, you know, that I don't know that that is exactly what happened, because for one thing, David DePape, or DePape, DePap, I don't know.
Crazy name, yeah.
David, let's just call him David. If you look at his social media writings and you look at the signs outside his house, like signs like BLM, you know, Black Lives Matter, and LGBTQ, BTQ, and all of that. So, you know, that's one side. And then there are things on his social media that are pro-Democrat and pro-Republican. You cannot make out one that he is for or against one particular side. And which is kind of, I don't think that they, you know, I don't think they planned this very well, quite frankly. They should have at least started out by putting out a whole bunch of things allegedly from him that were pro-Republican so that they could say, you know.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, and this is something I know you did elaborate in your own broadcast and the nature of this individual, David. But the thing is, I mean, the actual story itself was so weird, Carol, because, you know, I mean, number one, Nancy Pelosi, in that mansion she lives in, she's the third most powerful Democrat in the U.S. I mean, third in succession, so to speak. So, like, there's no security around her house. People can just walk in. There's no cameras. Nobody. I mean, how implausible. Yes,
there are lots of things that are hard to believe. That's one of the things. I mean, at the same time, a couple of days ago, the Capitol Police, and then just a little bit later, the San Francisco Police came out with this story that each of them, you know, have the house on video, constant security camera, but nobody happened to be watching at the time that David came into the house at 2:30 in the morning to see Nancy Pelosi's husband. I mean, the chances of that happening, that nobody was watching, I mean, for the same matter, you know, even if they weren't, you know, I don't believe that for a minute, but even if they weren't watching, even if there was the security and they weren't watching, you're going to tell me that the glass pane, he had doors that were made out of glass panes.
Yeah.
And this intruder supposedly broke one of the glass or some of the glass panes to get into the house. Now, besides the fact that the glass wasn't on the inside, it was on the outside. there was no alarm connected to these doors that are made of glass. Even his neighbors have come out and said, who live in that same neighborhood, said that they all have a security system that connected to the doors and the windows and so on. So Nancy Pelosi's house didn't have that. I mean, those are just some examples of what doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect this was a planned operation by the Democrats in some way. And although, as you also rightly point out, no one wants to see anyone hurt or injured, you know, in any regard, and that includes Paul Pelosi. But as you say, some of it's so weird. Like the glass, Carol, the glass was on the outside. Now, if somebody's breaking in, that's against, you know, Newton's laws of physics. It doesn't work that way. And yet, apparently, that is, we've all seen the images. And in fact, Carol, we will play it in a second when we talk about it, because the story seems to be that this guy, David, somehow got in. And was he invited in? Did someone open the door? How did he get in, Carol? That's the first thing. How did he get in? Did he Hi.
Well, you know, I mean, this is a whole other thing. The neighbors have come out with various stories. And of course, by now, I guess they've been paid off or something. But see, here, this is the thing. When it first happened, the 911 call was everywhere, all over the internet. And I listened to several examples, you know, several sources, several sites where that 911 call was. And it very clearly, I mean, first of all, they said something about he's talking in code, which wasn't, you know, really, I mean, I think that they said that after just sort of, well, I don't know why they thought that he was talking in code. I mean, the story was that he told the intruder that he had to go to the bathroom and his cell phone happened to be plugged in the bathroom. What intruder would let somebody, you know, I mean, granted, this intruder, we can talk about that in a little bit, about the intruder was mentally ill. So, but anyhow, so he got called 911. Now, all of these calls, 911 audios that came out right as soon as it happened, or very soon after it happened, it showed that he was saying, his name is David and he's my friend.
That's right.
Now, that was the code, you know, that he was saying he was his friend so that the intruder would calm down or something. First of all, the intruder apparently didn't do anything until the police came. And then all of a sudden they started hitting him over the head. I mean, what? Now, if that doesn't seem like it was, there's a lot of different, you know, you can make up a whole bunch of scenarios to explain the whole thing that are better than what they're saying.
Better than that, yeah.
But I mean, like, so for example, if he was paid off, if he was paid to do this by Democrats to go into the house, to make it look like a break-in and, you know, have this supposed list in his pocket of other Democrats that he wanted to attack. We haven't heard who that is, but and, you know, so he wasn't going to hurt him until there was somebody there to watch and see that he was hitting him over the head. I mean, it really, and why would you pick somebody who's mentally ill? You can't be sure. Maybe they didn't know how mentally ill he was. But of course, then, so the neighbors started off by saying that this man, David, had been to Paul Pelosi's house many times in the past. And they also said that there are other young men going and coming. I mean, he wasn't that, he was like 42, but like what the neighbor said was half Pelosi's age. That's how they put it. And coming and going, you know, at night all the time. So, you know, the idea, and of course he was, you know, it wasn't that long ago that he was arrested for a DUI, driving under the influence. And there was a man in the car whose identity was never revealed. Now I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that Paul Pelosi is gay, and even if he were gay, good for him, better than Nancy.
But I mean, again, this is one of the points that you did make in your own stream in this, Carol, that, you know, if he's gay, so fine. If he's not gay, fine, whatever. Being married to Nancy for those many years is any man's head would arguably be turned, you know. So it's not really about that, and we will get onto that because that's a key point as well. But by the same token, there's a certain hypocrisy here, because the Democrats virtue signal their you know, their embrace for the LGBT on the one hand, and on the other hand, it's no, Paul definitely super duper 100% straight.
Right. You
know, that's hypocrisy, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. If it's so wonderful, I mean, Biden has been more than any other president. Of course, he's taking orders from Obama. But more than any other president, Biden has tried to make the whole world LGBTQ plus trans. Yeah. You know, his whole thing is trans. Everybody has to become trans.
Yeah.
So if it was that he was gay, just as you said, then we should be celebrating him, not, you know, saying that, ooh, that's bad. Much hypocrisy. But
it's not just, again, it's the circumstances of what was going on also, Carol, merit a little consideration. It appears that either he or David or both of them were arguably in their underpants, and at least one of them had a hammer. Now, that's not, you know, that is an unusual scene. It's not one I even care to think about too deeply. But, I mean, it's weird. It's very, very weird. Who walks around at 2:30 in the morning in your underpants with a hammer? I don't get it. It's very, very odd. It's
well, really, you know, yes, yes. Actually, I hadn't been thinking up until now about the details of what one could do.
What the details, yeah.
But, you know, now I started thinking about that and I got off track.
I'm sorry.
you were saying it's very weird to, yes. I mean, oh, about, yes. Well, no, I know. The thing about the underwear. Now, the then underwear. The story now has changed. Not that they both were in their underwear. I mean, presumably David had underwear on. So well, I guess he was in his underwear. But now the story is that he had black. He was dressed like a ninja, you know?
I hadn't heard that, but is that the latest?
Well, he said he was wearing black, but he was wearing all black. That's one of the stories. I mean, I can't, you know. And now this, and the story for Paul Pelosi is that he had boxer shorts on and he had a pajama top on. So, right. I mean, yes, you know, okay, people can sleep in boxer shorts and a pajama top. That's not that unusual. No. But that is not what it was at the beginning. And
No, that's it. That's it, Carol. The thing about this story is, as you've pointed out so rightly, they've changed the story. They've sanitized and they keep updating it because the initial story, I think, was so... Well, we all laughed at it. It was completely implausible. And, you know, I mean, for example, how did David get to the Pelosi residence? Let's leave the ninja suit to one side because I don't believe that. It was in his underpants. Did he walk in his underpants? How did he get there?
No, you mean like if he really was just wearing his underpants? I'm saying that, another part of the story is that he was his partner. It was off and on and off again. Yeah. Partner, a woman, named Gypsy. I mean, that's her. Let's see. Her name is Oxane Gypsy Taub. Gypsy, they call her Gypsy. She was a staunch nudist activist, and he was, you know, contributed to that. He also did some nudist activism, you know. See, that's part of the thing. Of course, you don't hear about this, but you know, there's a whole sexual, regardless of what he was or wasn't doing with Paul Pelosi before he went to Paul Pelosi's house, you know, years before he went to Paul Pelosi's house, lot of sexual stuff. His children, it's not clear how many of them are his biological children or just whether they're children of the woman and he helped raise them. But in any case, they are claiming that David abused them, sexually abused them.
Yeah.
Don't know if it's true, but that's what they've been claiming. Mm-hmm. And then also he was abused, although it might have been just physically, but he was abused when he was a child. Mm-hmm. And then this whole nudist activist stuff. So there's all this, you know, inappropriate, shall we say, sexual stuff going on before he ever met Paul Pelosi. So it's not so hard to go from that, you know, to thinking that there might have been something sexually inappropriate going on. But
I mean, actually, just out of curiosity, what is a nudist activist? I mean, I've heard of many different titles. That's one of the most bizarre ones. You know,
Someone who's trying to get everybody else to be nude. and it worked. It worked with Paul Pelosi.
It seemed to be working with Paul Pelosi. He was almost naked. Yeah. But actually, you know, actually, Carol, I mean, those points you make, I mean, those are points of substance. The fact that, you know, once you start to examine the background of this individual, David DePape, that it's a troubled background by pretty much any definition, in terms of his relationship with this lady, Gypsy, and the children, be they biological or otherwise, and his own. I mean, as always, this is something, I guess, in your own sort of sphere, your professional sphere, you come across. I mean, once you start delving into things, it's remarkable, you know, that there's depth to these issues, as well as we can all laugh at the superficial insanity of it, but there are other issues floating around as well. This was a troubled man, By any definition.
Yes. I mean, I think he has some underlying psychosis, either schizophrenia or manic depressive illness, which is also called bipolar or something. But it's hard to determine exactly what, because he definitely has had so many drugs over the years that that hides and confuses the underlying diagnosis. One of the things that I found interesting, I don't know if you saw it, because I don't think many people were watching this, but after his first, David's first court appearance, his lawyer, who is a public defender, spoke on camera, but he was really, first of all, it looked like he hadn't slept all night. Did you see that interview?
I didn't see that one.
He had his hair going all over the place, kind of looking sort of greasy and just like he hadn't slept. And he said he met with him the night before, so maybe they were chatting all night. I don't know. But anyway, so he didn't want to reveal, of course, people were asking lots of questions, and he didn't want to reveal very much. And he said, well, that's an attorney-client privilege. Mm-hmm. But one thing, somebody asked him a question. I don't even remember the question, but he gave a very vague and sort of obtuse, complicated, mysterious answer, which was something about the guy. He was asked about politics. Are politics going to get involved in your defense? Yeah. The lawyer said, oh yes, that's going to be part of it or something. Now, I'm a forensic psychiatrist. I do an expert witness. And yes. So I testify in all these kinds of cases. I actually emailed him and offered my services to be the, expert witness for David.
Yes.
But I don't think they're going to pick me, because so when he said yes, the politics were going to be involved in some way, it could either have meant that he was going to talk about how this poor mentally ill guy was swayed by the Republican rhetoric against Democrats and stirring people up to be violent and so on. I think that is what he meant. There's a small hope that I'm holding out for that maybe he meant that he does have some mental illness, and the Democrats got to him and paid him to do this. Now, that's a very far, the more time goes by and the more we see, that seems a little far-fetched. So, and I was just reading this morning, did you read about the judge? The judge said that she worked with Nancy Pelosi's daughter on something. I didn't get into all the details, but so wouldn't that be a reason to recuse herself? I mean, we have to look into that, really, because certainly we should not have a judge who worked with Nancy Pelosi's daughter being the judge of this case.
Yeah, but this is San Francisco, Carol. Anything seems to normal standards do not appear to apply in this. But the guy, was certainly a troubled guy for sure. And yet I felt a bit bad for him in a way, because he's been hung out to dry, and the charges that have been leveled against him. It's like he's the worst man in America.
Yes.
And, sure, maybe the allegation is he attacked Paul Pelosi, and that a court will determine that, of course. But I can't believe the way that he's been, a man with these issues has been put under such, or maybe he doesn't feel it, I don't know, but I certainly would think he would feel vastly pressurized by, all the charges against him. He could go to jail for life. Shocking,
yes,
I think.
Yes. They really threw the book at him.
Yeah.
And, I wonder if he's I wonder if he's going to be given, well, first of all, some psychiatrist has seen him and evaluated him and determined that he is not competent to stand trial. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
And also, he should be not guilty by reason of insanity. But I don't, who are they going to get? obviously it would have to be a Democrat psychiatrist, but, you know, and so either he's going to, but if he is, let's just say he is given the proper psychiatric medication and he does come to his senses, you know, is he going to tell, what story is he going to tell? Is he going to tell the truth? Or is he going to tell some story, or is he going to be Epstein'd? You know how Epstein supposedly committed suicide, committed suicide.
Well, that's why you see the thing about the cameras, no one having paid attention to the CCTV cameras did ring a bell for me when it came to Epstein. Yes. You know, those cameras that just accidentally didn't work during the time when he took his own life. I mean, it's there are certain echoes, Carol, between in some regards the stories. But you made a very important point, I thought, which was again focusing on David DePape. You were saying that, you know, this is clearly a mentally unwell man, and there are so many others like him in the United States. And I actually do think it's a difference between the UK and the US. It's more obvious to me that this is more overt in the US. So many mentally ill people, and they just seem to just wander around, and it's a problem. Yes. It's an issue, isn't it?
It is a problem. And I, by the way, I lived in London for a while, and I studied at Anna Freud's clinic in Hampstead, and I did research at the Maudsley. So in expressed emotion for schizophrenics. So the problem is in America that somebody's bright idea was some years ago, you know, 10, 20 years ago, to close all the state and county they didn't close all the county ones, but they closed pretty much all the state. They closed most of the hospitals where they kept patients who were chronically mentally ill. Now, those are patients who have schizophrenia and bipolar. These are chronic mental illnesses. It doesn't mean that somebody can't live a life, but they can't just, I mean, nowadays what happens in America is that if somebody is brought to a hospital, a psychiatric hospital, they're kept, if they're admitted, I mean, the psychiatric hospitals such as they are filled, you know, are full. If they even admit them, then they get to stay. There's no, you know, a big problem is insurance. There's no money to keep them. I mean, that's the thing. In these more acute hospitals. So they stay for 3 days and then they're let out. I actually am working on a case right now where a woman was brought into a psychiatric hospital, it was like a regular hospital that had a psychiatric ward. And they kept her for like a week. She was suicidal when she came in, and they kept her for a week. They didn't do anything to fix her. And then they just let her out because, you know, insurance wouldn't pay more than a week. So they let her out, and she ended up, not necessarily killing herself, but they gave her too much of the wrong medication, and that ultimately killed her, like a day after she left. And so, so they have a lawsuit. So I'm the expert witness in that lawsuit. But I've actually done a number of these cases where people were let out too early. And either they hurt somebody else or they killed themselves inadvertently or something. And that's what's happening. And we have to bring back these chronic. You see, the thought of that was, the plan was that to keep the people in a least restrictive environment. And so the plan was to let them out of these chronic mental hospitals. They weren't all like cuckoo's nest, by the way. They certainly kept the people a lot safer than they are on the street. And so the plan was to let them out and to then have them go to outpatient clinics. These kinds of problems, unless you have somebody that sort of supervises, you know, or like a wife or some kind of a family member or somebody, to make sure that the person goes to their appointments and gets refills on their medication. Once their medication runs out and they stop taking it, they become psychotic again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a very major problem. And you know, there are things happening. I mean, we don't hear about all the horrible things that are happening on the streets.
You see, there is that very real mental illness issue for sure, Carol. But in a way, it's kind of as when we come to this story, it's this particular story, it's been turned into, it has been politicized because, I mean, Biden and the gang were instantly all over this one, you know, as this is what happens when you get this inflammatory rhetoric from Republicans. And I think you made the point that they've almost tried to link this attack in a way to January 6th. Because there's when David DePape came in, didn't he say, or they alleged that he said,
where's Nancy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
they're trying to combine, yes, the where's Nancy, the hammer, the ties, the, yes, now they're saying that he said that his plan was to knee Nancy, to hit her with the hammer in the knee. Mm-hmm. And have her be taken back to Congress mm-hmm. in a wheelchair, and then for everybody to know that she was kneed, and presumably he did it. But then why would that be? I mean, so, what? But it, so it doesn't make any sense, of course.
No, it doesn't. It absolutely no. God, when you say that out loud, it just it's literally mad. That was just, But as you say, but I think, and this is where it all links in, of course, till tomorrow, which is a really important day, not just for the US, but for the world, including us here in the UK, when you guys go to the polls in the midterms. And it's almost like this event was almost being conjured up as a kind of reinforcement mechanism to trigger people to, you know, Biden keeps telling us democracy is on the ballot box. He keeps telling us all these. You know, all these
it
things
is on the ballot box.
Not in the way he thinks. Not in the way he thinks.
Democrats, it's going to be gone. Democracy is going to be gone.
I know. I agree with you. And I think what's going to happen, I don't know what you reckon to the next tomorrow and, you know, when we get the results, but, you know, the polls all seem to indicate that this could be a reversal in the Senate and also in the House, hopefully, and the Democrats get booted out of their position, and Pelosi, Nancy, gets to spend more time with Paul, which might be a good idea, perhaps. But you know, notwithstanding, so it's a monumental moment for the Democrats. So I'm very suspicious about this whole story because I think they were trying to engineer something. But as you said, Carol, it's been done so incredibly badly. I mean, you cannot help but laugh. I see all the comments coming up here. Nobody's taking it that seriously, you know. And we're both laughing at it as well. And is that a common risk? Can I ask you? You know, amongst Americans, that you see our response, where the Brits are kind of laughing, thinking this is insane. Is that how most Americans have responded to it? What do you think?
Well, you know, Americans, I think, are a little mixed. They're not really sure how to, which Kool-Aid to drink, you know? But, you know, one of the things you mentioned about, yes, there have been reports. I mean, I read the Daily Mail every day, by the way.
Yep.
So there have been reports about that it's going to be a red, what do they call it, a red tide or something?
A red tsunami. Yes. Going to sweep the country.
So that makes me a little worried to see that. And it's not just been in the Daily Mail. It's been in the New York Post, too. But, you know, it makes me worry that people are going to see that and think, well, I don't have to go out and vote. You know, it's over. They're already going to win. So, you know, that's fine. Why do they need my vote, too? So if anybody in America is listening to this who hasn't voted yet, please go out and vote.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a very good point you make, actually. It is a good point that because complacency and whatnot is always a killer for elections, you know. So getting as many people voting in the right way to make a change tomorrow is going to be crucial. But do you not think it speaks to the desperation of the Democrats that they have been talking? They're the people typical inversion tactics. They're the people with the inflammatory rhetoric. And I think they are the people that were trying to contrive this, you know, and so that they could somehow ring a bell, ring a bell to their base, which is to say, never forget January 6th, you know, the worst insurrection in the world.
I mean, that was the thing. They were hoping the January 6th committee, you know, which of course they started their meetings, you know, to lead up to the election, you know, they timed it to lead up to the election and, you know, trying to drum home January 6th. That was the worst thing. I mean, it's such a lie, you know. I mean, yes, some people went into the Capitol on January 6th. They were not sent there by Trump. I watched Trump's speech in the morning. Talking about setups, that was a setup. In fact, I had somebody on my show, some people who were there and who saw that it was people who were sent there by Democrats to make it a more violent kind of thing. It was supposed to be just they were supposed to be standing out there. It was they were saying it was a very loving kind of thing until these people who were the agitators who were sent there to do this kind of stuff started agitating. And you know, I think, for example, on the anniversary of January 6th this past year, you know, there were all these speeches comparing it to Pearl Harbor and 9/11 and all of that. I mean, it's just lies. It's just, what do you call it? You know, trying to, can't think of the word, trying to pull the wool over people's eyes.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to gaslight.
Gaslighting. There it is.
That's what they're trying to do. Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, people I talk to, a lot of people say to me that they think that what should happen tomorrow will be a great win for the Republican Party. But there's a sense of fear, not just about turnout, Carol, but about cheating. Because let's face it, and I know we are broadcasting to YouTube, so we would never for one second claim that it was a complete cheat in 2020. Hello, YouTube. I think it was a fortified, it was a very fortified election in 2020. But the thing is, Carol, if they could do it then, what's to stop them doing it tomorrow or the day after?
I know, that worries me. Actually, I was just talking to somebody this morning who said that, and I never knew that this happened. Maybe it's just my ignorance, but that sometimes in LA, sometimes there are votes, you know, instead of it being, I don't know, like in a library or some kind of a neutral sort of place, not that strange things can't happen, you know, with pipes bursting and all that in neutral places.
Yeah,
but,
that's right. Yeah.
But there's also voting in people's homes. I never heard of such a thing. You know, that certainly seems like a very risky thing, whichever party you're on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But this is one of the big problems, you know, a lot of people look to the United States with a sense of, you know, great admiration for all the things it's achieved. But latterly, certainly, I think in the last number of years, we're beginning to look upon it as is it turning into a banana republic? Because if you cannot trust, you know, the integrity of the electoral process, well what have you got? Carol,
that's right. That's right. I know it is very disturbing. It is very sad. You know, Obama was the worst president that we've ever had. And yes, as somebody wrote on your screen, it's his second presidency, you know, his second term through manipulating. Yeah. He's the puppeteer over Biden. Yep. And, you know, another thing that I do is I'm the terrorist therapist. And, you know, I help people cope with the memories of 9/11, which is still affecting us, and also to try to prepare people for the ongoing threat of terrorism, which there certainly is. Mm-hmm. And I've written two books about terrorism. So on one of them was published in the UK in London, and it was the for the 1 year anniversary of your 9/11, 7/7,
yeah.
So it came out in 2006, 7/7/2006. Anyway, so I've been, you know, since 9/11, I have been very much involved with terrorism. I do a podcast, The Terrorist Therapist Show, and so on. And so when Obama was in office, I was, you know, very paying attention to what he was doing and not doing and so on in regard to making it much easier for terrorists to come into the States to, and of course he's continuing now, you know, with Biden, it's like 100 times worse. You know, now that Obama is operating behind the scenes, he's allowing himself to make it that much worse and let them blame Biden kind of thing. And so it's really, really putting our country in danger. And, in so many different ways. And yes, it's an embarrassment. I mean, it's kind of like we've become a Saturday Night Live skit, but it's like reality, you know?
Can I ask you, Carol, what's your opinion of Joe Biden's sort of mental acuity to be president of the United States?
I have been talking about this till I'm blue in the face. I started when he was running for president, when he was in the basement running for president, because you know, I was mentioning that I work as a forensic psychiatrist. So I have a number of cases where somebody's competency is at issue. Like, let's say someone writes a will and then they die or they're still alive, but their children are arguing over what the will says, you know? Yeah. And so one of the ones, the child who was not included in the will, questions the competency of their parent to see. So, you know, so that's an example of the kinds of cases. And so I was more paying attention to how he was. And I called what his mental state was, I called it encroaching dementia. And since he was in his basement running for president, it has been encroaching ever more. And now you certainly don't have to be a psychiatrist to see, you know, that he really, he's very confused. He has dementia. End of story. People are allowing him to still be president. It's absurd. And his wife, is still allowing him to be president, not taking him to a doctor. Bringing him to, she wants to be first lady so much that she's putting that before taking care of her husband. I mean, like, what wife who loves her husband just keeps letting him go out there making a fool of himself, number one, but also seeing that he has these problems that need to be treated, need to be evaluated first, and then treated.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I have to say, my own mother, she got Alzheimer's in the last years of her life. And I you know, like many people, you know, so I've lived through what that's like, and you see the symptoms, Carol. It's so obvious. I see so many of the things that she were the symptoms that she had in Biden. But the difference is, you know, she wasn't president of the United States. She didn't have, you know, her finger on the nuclear button. I mean, she wasn't making decisions that influence, you know, hundreds of millions of, well, actually more than that, around the world. So it's like, surely people can see that there's a genuine issue. It almost seems cruel to have this man in the White House.
Yes. And why they haven't called for the 25th Amendment. I mean, I've been saying that, you know, and especially now that he got COVID, because that would have been, or still is in a way, a great excuse. Like, it's a way to move him out with the 25th Amendment graciously, like not saying, hey, Joe, you have dementia, but saying, you know, COVID with the brain fog and long dementia that it's likely that he has. That would have been the gracious way of getting him out. And yet nobody is doing anything. It's just, it's very, very frustrating. And yes, yeah. Especially now with Putin, you know, threatening, and he's not just threatening. People are not taking Putin seriously enough, and they really should. And Biden just says these things that inflame Putin more. It's really dangerous.
It is, because every word that a president says, it's important. People will reflect. Will, you know, people study it, and people read things into it. But yet, even in the last couple of days, I see he's consistently gets things wrong about nearly everything. I mean, petrol, gas prices just being one of them, where he seems to live in a parallel world. But that would be explained by his condition, wouldn't it? Because he like people have got that condition, they do begin to sort of diverge from reality.
Yeah,
the sad thing about the condition. I mean, so that's why I don't. I mean, yes, we can all laugh at Biden and but it's worse than that, because he's a president with dementia. I don't think he's the first one, I think, that the U.S. has ever had. Hopefully, the last. But
supposedly Reagan. I wasn't. In his later years, he was supposedly beginning to. Maybe that's when he decided to do the thing about letting all the inmates out of the insane asylums. I have to look into that. That might actually be.
Yeah, well, apart from that, yeah. I mean, but although somebody says here in the stream, it's okay. I don't think Biden's able to remember the nuclear code.
I know. Well, you know, that is a real issue. So, like, I'm sure he doesn't remember it. So if he doesn't remember, who do they have, you know, with him remembering it? Or is it written on his palm or something? Oh, wait a second. Wait, here we go. I mean, we're laughing because it's really anxiety provoking. You know, this is really very scary. Yes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think all of this laughter is the emotion, because it is fundamentally all disturbing and scary. And you know, from the Pelosi story, which is at one level funny, but in another manner disturbing. And all of this is the problem we have, Carol. And this is then, I just wanted to sort of just finish on talking about the media, the role of journalism in all of these matters. I mean, where have the journalists all gone to, Carol? Because I don't see too many journalists anymore.
Yes, I know. Journalism used to be this proud thing where, well, like I talked about on my show, that I was making a blatant, I wasn't necessarily giving equal share to both sides, but I was saying that was what I was doing, not pretending that I was giving equal. Yeah. But, you know, NBC, there's a whole brouhaha, not loud enough anymore, but NBC did a show where one of the reporters did bring up these questions, like what we were talking about, you know, the glass and how did he get in and all these different things. And then, you know, they got attacked for that. And so they took it off and they made some excuse. They said it didn't live up to the standards of NBC, but they never answered the question. All these questions that still haven't been answered.
Yeah. It's a bit like, I actually did go and look at the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation's coverage of the Pelosi story. And it's absolutely shocking, because they're taking the narrative and then they're saying anybody who challenges anything, it's far right conspiracy theorists. This is the BBC is very biased broadcasters, as bad as CNN. Yes. But there was a time when journalists would have found stories like these fascinating. And let's dig in, let's see what we find.
But they
don't do that, do they?
Thank God for the National Enquirer.
But journalism has just gone so missing at a time when arguably, Carol, we never needed it more.
Yes,
and I think you referenced in your broadcast the fact that, you know, journalists now, I mean, the public, I think the only people that the general public treat with more contempt than journalists is politicians. Now, that's probably rightly so. But I mean, you know, journalism has lost all its kudos, and they've done it to themselves by just looking the other way and not asking the questions that we've even chatted about tonight.
Yes, yes, it is really because, you know, journalists have a very, I mean, I think people don't remember or, you know, or never realized or whatever, but journalists have a very important role in democracy. I mean, they're supposed to be the ones digging up all the answers to these questions and not putting it just according to what they want it to be, you know, but really being the muckrakers, you know, being the ones who don't have something in the game. And or even if obviously everybody has opinions, but to be able to overcome these opinions and at least put in something from the other side.
But like the thing is that surprises me, like when it comes to the Pelosi story and those questions we were asking about, how did he get in? How did he arrive? Those are all like, you know, journalism 101. Those are like the obvious questions that any journalist would ask. And yet outside of the mainstream, it's only outside of the mainstream media that any of these questions are being, you know, discussed. And that does that not speak to the state of, the world in general, but the U.S. in particular in 2022, Carol, that, you know, we can't find mainstream journalists, apart from arguably Tucker Carlson, maybe to ask them.
I mean, you know, there's Fox and there's Newsmax, but OAN, you know, the cable carriers that were carrying OAN, now the latest one just let them go. It's just online. I mean, thank God it's online at least. But so they're trying to edge out, you know, all the opposing opinions, you know, and you can't have a democracy last with, you know, and it's so sad because when you think about before Biden, in the years when Trump was president, he made no bones about it, America first. And the whole world was safer. It wasn't just America that was doing better. The whole world was doing better. Now we're a laughingstock. It makes people in our allies, I'm sure, you know, feel less confident too, if with this encroaching dementia president. And it's just something, it has got to change. And I hope it does tomorrow. But yes, a part of me, you know, the last election in 2020, when I went to sleep, I went to sleep because Trump was winning. And I thought, you know, we had it all in the bag. And then, and then I woke up and lo and behold, what happened?
I know, Carol, I did exactly the same. I went to bed thinking, this is it. It's going to be a great day. And I woke up and it's been like a nightmare ever since.
Yes.
There's a question someone's asked. If I could just put a quick question to you.
Sure.
Nev500 says, what does Carol feel that the relentless fear propaganda by the mainstream media has had on the general population? That's an interesting question. The relentless fear coming, you know, the fear porn over but just about everything, really, I suppose. But how do you think that impacts on a general population? And then I've got another question for you in a second.
Sure. Yeah. I could talk for I mean, there is the thing, if it bleeds, it leads, you know, that's an old journalist thing. If it bleeds, it leads, meaning that, you know, the violence, put that first and people will watch, right? The rest of the boring newscast. But so there is a thing, you know, if it's a tornado or any kind of anything that creates some kind of fear, that does get people to glue onto their set. And of course, COVID for 2 years has been the number one thing.
You're right.
And what that has done, is to make people feel afraid and to make people feel helpless. And I think it was, I mean, even though that's sort of a normal that's been around, this, if it bleeds, it leads and all this kind of thing, you know, shock people and you know, that's been around forever in a way, but it certainly has heightened over the last, since Biden has been president, and of course, since COVID. But, and the point of that is, to get a population to feel so helpless, scared and helpless and in their homes, that they won't come out and fight against what we're trying to do, which is the left socialism. You know, that's what's happening here. It's the left is manipulating. I mean, I must say, it seems to have come out of nowhere, but really this has been happening. It has to have been happening for years and years and years, certainly during Obama's reign. I mean, I guess it started at least back then. And getting people with socialist agendas into very important positions, for example, teachers. I mean, not just politicians, of course, but teachers, imbuing things in little kids that, I mean, that's the whole trans thing, the whole taking away people's identity, taking away their memories of what America was, you know, changing literally changing the history books, all of these things, and getting generation upon generation upon generation, all these different ways. I mean, even with COVID and making lockdowns, getting people to have financial problems now, of course, with more financial problems, so that they are dependent upon the government for handouts, which is socialism. I mean, it's been orchestrated. You couldn't have orchestrated it any better, you know, it's the sad part is that we're sort of realizing it a little late in the story, not to say that we can't still do something about it, we have to work extra hard.
Before we go, there's one story I couldn't resist running this one past you. You may have seen over on Twitter with Elon Musk's changes over there that two U.S. personalities I see have run into issues, and they may require psychiatric help. One of them is Kathy Griffin, who had her account suspended and then permanently banned by Elon Musk for impersonation. And then I also see today that Whoopi Goldberg has also said she's done. She's done with Twitter now. And it's interesting because these personalities have spent an awful lot of their time invested on social media. And do you think they'll be able to cope without the buzz of being at the center of a left-wing Twitter?
Well, there are other, social media platforms. I mean, even I was a little shocked to see that Jack, you know, from Twitter is now planning on doing his own. I would have thought, you know, Elon Musk is a brilliant man. And I would have thought that he would have put something in the contract that says that he couldn't compete, non-complete compete clause. So I don't know what's up with that. But there are, I mean, Facebook, for example, you know, that's horribly, I'm really disappointed in horribly left. They can do that, or Instagram. I don't really know what Instagram, even LinkedIn. I was suspended from LinkedIn for writing stuff about vaccines. And, I mean, LinkedIn, that's such, I don't know how familiar.
I'm familiar with it.
But it's such a, like a nerdy, you know, it's more, I don't want to say nerdy. I mean, I'm on it. I first tweet and then I do the same thing on LinkedIn, but you know, it's a more serious sort of professional kind of platform.
It is,
And LinkedIn took down the, and you know, I mean, it's so like Twitter and LinkedIn and various platforms, how dare they say that take down a doctor's, you know, opinions about some kind of illness, like about vaccines or whatever, which of course are turning out to be, well, very much true, you know, and where do they have the education or the experience to say that they know better? So yes, it's very frustrating, but I'm happy that Elon Musk, I mean, I don't know, you know, how, I mean, I wonder if, you know, I think some of these stars or so-called influencers think that they have more influence than they really do.
Lots of
other influencers that people can while away the hours with on Twitter.
Yeah. Do you think social media is an addiction?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I get up every morning. I want to, you know, I used to talk a lot about all kinds of things happening in the world, but including like Hollywood and people getting divorced. And in fact, I had a column in the first in the National Examiner, and then I was promoted to the National Enquirer, like Hollywood on the Couch, things about Hollywood. Yep. You know, and my point was to, to teach, you know, if you look, if you're interested in something because celebrities are doing it, then you'll learn things for yourself, like about divorce or addiction or whatever it is. But for years now, you know, maybe since Obama, I've been much more concerned with helping the United States, helping save America, make America great again, or make America, you know, a democracy again. And so, so what I do is every morning, first thing I do is to look, I look in the New York Post and I look in the Daily Mail, and then I go to, Breitbart, but primarily I stick with New York Post and Daily Mail, and I find which story gets me the most irate, and then I post that and my opinions about it on Twitter and then on LinkedIn. So if you want to call it addiction, I guess, but you know, it makes me feel good to know that right off the bat, I'm helping people see something for what it is. You know, like I did something the other day about the Middle East and China buying up farmland in America, for example.
Yes, absolutely. Along with Bill Gates, I think Bill Gates has bought the remaining farmland in America. You know, it's been wonderful chatting to you, Carol. I can see we've gone through our allocated time. Can I just say, I can see all the comments on the streams. Look, thanks. I think everyone appreciates all your wisdom this evening, and thank you so much for taking time out of on your very busy schedule to spend with myself and my audience, Carol. It's deeply appreciated. And just to remind everybody, if we can just bring up on the screen again some of Carol's books. I think we have them sitting there. There we go. You can buy different books from Carol there. Bad Boys, Bad Girls.
The coping with terrorism is the one that I said was the 1 year anniversary edition of 7/7. And then I have have a website, terroristtherapist.com, which has some of my latest book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists. Oh my.
Okay, so check out those all those places with Carol. Carol, as I say, you've been a star. Really appreciate you being here this evening. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and we will return later in the week. That's it from myself and Carol for this evening. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.